And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, and joining me today is Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, are you ready to get into a podcast that we have put together, and I can only call it a below the fold podcast? So are you getting your hipster on today?
Yes, I am going to talk about things you have never heard of.
Yeah, and things that we're trying to get ahead of the curve. We're trying to find it before it becomes popular. You know, but we will be looking at Kansas State, an oft overlooked team, as they were one of the later schools to really get going with spring practice. Therefore, it's a little bit of extra attention. And Tom and I are going to say, so are you buying Kansas State? There seems to be a little bit of buzz surrounding the Wildcats going into 2014. We, of course, remember what they were able to do, winning the Big 12 with Colin Klein 2 years ago. But finished last year, was a strong finish, rough start with the loss to North Dakota State. We're going to go deeper into that. We'll talk about some news and notes of the day, including Doriel Green Beckham's suspension, the very talented Missouri wide receiver, Cliff Kingsbury, and the Texas Tech spring game, and a little bit of schedule changes. And then finally, we will wrap up the show with even more college football hipsterness as we look across the Mountain West, the MAC, the American Conference USA, and yes, the Sun Belt, and try and see where the teams are that are going to be battling for that one spot. Remember, in the college football playoff, you get one spot on New Year's Eve, saved for those little five other conferences. So we will sort of start scan through that. So, but Tom, right here at the top, have you noticed this Kansas State buzz?
Yeah, I get it. There's a lot of people that are thinking Kansas State's a Big 12 sleeper type deal, simply because the Big 12, I think, feels pretty wide open this year. I mean, I think Oklahoma would have to be considered the favorite right now, considering the way it finished last season. But after that, you know, Baylor's lost quite a bit. They've got, you know, most of their offense coming back, but they have to replace a lot of people on that. Oklahoma State's replacing a lot of people. It's just a wide open conference. And when you think, you know, consistency in the Big 12 under Bill Snyder, you think Kansas State. So I think that makes them a de facto possibility.
What would you say are the like if you were to ask me, what are you certain of looking at the Kansas State? Because Big 12 in general, as we've talked about on this podcast, I'm right there with you. You tell me that four teams are going to finish 7-2. I say, okay, that sounds about right. I know for a fact that Tyler Lockett, the Kansas State wide receiver, might be one of the most dynamic playmakers in the entire Big 12. I do not know how Jake Waters, who has sort of now taken over that quarterback position, how he's going to take a step forward. He's a little bit of a better passer. That's great for Tyler Lockett. But I also don't know what's going on with John Hubert being gone. And so let's start right there on the offensive side of the ball. Is there anything that you feel good about other than Tyler Lockett?
No, there's a lot of questions on this offense. I mean, if you look at Kansas State as a whole, they've only got 10 returning starters coming back from last year's team. And, you know, 6 on offense, 4 on defense. So there's a lot of new faces in, because you mentioned Hubert, the team's leading rusher, is gone. He's left. The team's second leading rusher was was Sam, the court Daniel Sams. But he's moving to wide receiver this year. So it's hard to know what kind of impact he's going to have in the running game. And it's like, you feel like Kansas State, the run game's going to be fine, because generally under Bill Snyder and in that offense, they can run the ball. They've, you know, generally replaced running back after running back in recent years. But like you mentioned, Jake Waters, he's pretty much the guy now at quarterback. And last year, you know, he finished the season somewhat strong, but the problem was, in Big 12 play, he only completed 55%. His passes. I mean, he limited turnovers. He only had the 4 interceptions in conference play, which certainly helped, you know, offset the lack of efficiency throwing the ball. But that's something I'm looking at him. He's going to need to improve. He's going to have to become more efficient, because even Colin Klein, who none of us would ever consider to be a great passer, even he was able to complete 65% of his passes. So there's a lot of questions on the offensive side of the ball. And I think Jake Waters is going to play a large role in how good this team is.
Right. And you want to give, of course, the benefit of the doubt that if the staff feels comfortable letting Waters take over as the number one and sort of giving Daniel Sams that option, hey, if you want to get on the field, because he clearly, as we saw from him being a rushing threat in 2013, he's an athletic guy. He's a very skilled player. And so moving him to wide receiver, not an uncommon move, especially in that situation. But again, don't really know. Supposedly, our number one running back is DeMarcus Robinson, but he's like fourth or fifth down when you look at last year's returning rushers. Like, he was the fifth leading rusher, maybe.
Yeah, he didn't get a ton of carries last
Didn't get a ton of carries, and so that almost seems like an open competition. All right, on the defensive side of the ball, I know the defensive end, Ryan Mueller, should be a force and should be able to be good enough that he makes opposing teams game plan for him. He had 11.5 sacks in 2013, but we've got a huge hole at the linebacker position to replace. You've got some players that need to step up in the defensive backfield. What do you know and what are you asking when you're looking at the defensive side of the ball for Kansas State?
It's like I mentioned, there's only four starters back, and you mentioned Ryan Mueller. That's a good one to get back for sure.
Yeah.
There are four starters back on that defense, but leading tackler's gone. And what Bill Snyder did last year in recruiting is what Bill Snyder does just about every year in recruiting, is he got a whole bunch of JUCO players. Kansas State, their 2013 class has 8 JUCO transfers, 5 of which are on the defensive side, mostly focusing in the linebacking core in the secondary, because that's where Kansas State has a lot to fill in. So it will be interesting to see how those JUCO transfers fit themselves into the defense quick and whether they can produce, because Snyder's been very good. He's got the track record that makes me think they're going to be okay, but a lot of times these JUCO transfers, they show up and, you know, it takes a little time to adjust, which could be a reason why Kansas State got off to such a slow start last year, is because new players were adjusting, switching levels. So the defense, it's been a strength for Kansas State. Given the history of Bill Snyder's teams, it's hard to think it's going to be a bad defense, but it's like the offense. There's a lot of new faces on, and I think early in the year, we're going to find out a lot about this team, I think, earlier in the year.
These Kansas State defenses in recent years, even as the sort of regardless of personnel, it seems like they have the formula to be able to stop some of the more breakneck, wide open Big 12 offenses. They did it.
They're always good fundamentally. They don't miss a lot of tackles. You know what I mean? There's nobody on these defenses that they've had, you know, even through Brown in the last few years, but he was a stud. But there's no freak athletes on these defenses. They just get to where they're supposed to be. They do their jobs. And when they get to the ball, they tackle the ball carrier. And that's worked very well for them.
Yeah, it's not that hard to explain. Like, the offense, what they're trying to do is create a one-on-one situation and make a defensive player miss a tackle. That's basically the idea. If you teach your defense not to miss tackles, you can do a great job of slowing down these very potent offenses.
It's amazing what tackling can do for a defense.
It's amazing. CC Texas football. all right. So you mentioned the slow start last year. Lost to North Dakota State, sort of set it off. They've won 6 out of their final 7, including beating Michigan in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. There's been some chatter. Again, they were one of the last teams at the BCS, or the former BCS, now we're calling it Party of Five, one of the last schools at the Party of Five level to start. The chatter amongst the players has been that we're trying to pick up where we left off, and important to point out that a slow start will not work this year, because September 18th, Auburn comes to visit in Manhattan, and so if we're going to talk about sort of what we're expecting from Kansas State this year, I think A, we should know a lot by the end of the day, September 18th, and seeing how they look against the defending national runners-up. But also, you can't have a slow start. This will be a very big game. It will be on a national stage. It is in Manhattan, and this is the other side of a home-and-home from, like, 07, right?
Yeah, about 07 or 08, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, this has sort of been a game that has snuck up on us almost, and I'm asking you now, just as we've looked at Kansas State, how are you feeling about that matchup just sitting here on April 9th, 2014?
I'm feeling very favorable towards Auburn, considering what we've seen. And there's too many questions, like the questions we've talked about Kansas State. It's just, I don't know enough about this team to sit here and think that even at home, that right now this team is capable of beating Auburn. And, you know, they get the game before Auburn's a tough test too, because it's, you know, they open Big 12 play the second weekend of the season at Iowa State, who, you know, it's not exactly a Big 12 powerhouse, but there have been plenty of Big 12 powerhouses who have felt the sting of going to Ames in recent years. It's never as easy as you think. So I think that Auburn matchup is going to show us a lot about Kansas State, but to me, even if the Wildcats get blown out in that game, like say Auburn runs it up like 45-17 or something like that on them, I don't think it would be a damning statement about their chances because, as we mentioned last year, when at the conference play last year, it was a much better team. I feel like with so many new faces on this team, they might need September. They might come out of it 2-2 out of conference, but I think they could be a better team at the end of September than they were before it, even, you know, with this, despite the results.
Yeah, and then you've got Texas, Oklahoma State, and Baylor also in the earlier part of the Big 12 schedule. I see what you're saying. Playing Auburn could be great for preparing for Oklahoma mm-hmm. State and Baylor. Just getting to see that speed, having to move at that level. I can see it. All right, what's best guess at Kansas State's record right now? What are you thinking?
Right now, based on what we know, I lean more in a 7-5, 8-4 range. It's just it's a very tough schedule. We mentioned, you know, the Iowa State second week, Auburn, that's not going to be easy. Then in your conference play, they've got Texas Tech, Texas, Kansas, and Oklahoma State at home. It's nice to get those teams at home, but those certainly aren't guaranteed wins. And you look at the road games, you get the road trip to Oklahoma in the middle of October, that's going to be very tough. TCU and West Virginia on the road in back-to-back games, although there's a bye week between them. But still, as we saw, even with their struggles last year, West Virginia is not easy to beat at home. And then, you know, they just finished the schedule period with three of their last four games on the road with TCU, West Virginia, and then the final game of the year at Baylor with Kansas sandwiched in between, which, you know, should be a cookie, but you never know. Kansas has improved a little bit last year, too, and maybe improving this year. So I think right now I feel safer saying 7-5, maybe 8-4. But if things click, this could be a 10-win, 9-win team.
I think this is an 8-4, 6-3 in conference play. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that could work. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I'm sure that in that 6-3, there's going to be like a TCU loss, but a Baylor win. There's going to be one game that they shouldn't lose and do, and there's going to be one game that they shouldn't win and they pull the upset.
Yeah.
That's my 6-3.
It's kind of a Kansas State formula.
Yeah, that's, I guess that's shame on me for lack of creativity. all right, moving on to the news and notes brought to you by insert sponsor here. If you would like to sponsor the news and notes section of the Ion College Football Podcast, hit us up at Ion CFB. But in all seriousness, switching gears, Missouri wide receiver Doriel Green Beckham suspended indefinitely. A lengthy statement from head coach Gary Pinkel talking about just sort of how disappointed he is that all of these issues continue to pile up. There was, of course, the one-game suspension in 2012 when he was one of a couple Missouri players arrested and charged with marijuana possession. Then he was in January around – he was inside a car that was pulled over and some charges were handed out there. Now we find out reportedly that he is involved in an ongoing investigation by the Columbia Police Department regarding an event that happened over the weekend. Tom, we normally – have a couple of ways that this story could go at this point. Mm-hmm. To one fork would be the repeated small incident, and the program just decides that, you know, they need to part ways. And that would be your Greg Reed at Florida State, your Josh Harvey Clemens at Georgia, you know, just essentially, you know, whatever's going on. And it's important to note that, unless Tom has something that I don't, neither of us have inside information. This is just in general. Nope. There's only but so many little knick-knack, you know, run-ins with the law that most football programs will tolerate. What is your thought here? Are you nervous that Doriel Green Beckham might not be part of Missouri's football program for the 2014 season, or are you still holding off to wait and see what happens?
I'm more in wait and see because we don't know for sure. You know, we don't, like you said, we don't know for sure what this latest suspension is for, but generally hearing, you know, involved in an ongoing investigation isn't, you know, something that's you have an optimistic outlook about. So I feel like if Pinkel is making this statement earlier and now, you know, without anything really coming public and suspending him indefinitely, which, you know, could be forever, could be a week. You never, that's the thing right. about indefinitely. So I think we need to wait really to find out, see if some information or facts come out about what led to the suspension. But just look at the last few years, it's, you know, there's a couple strikes and, you know, there's a couple check marks on the wrong, you know, on the Santa's good or bad list. There's a couple bad things on DGP under the if Pinkle Santa. I think that's something we should do a whole episode about Gary Pinkle.
Gary Pinkle Santa. As Saint Nick. I can rock
yeah,
with it.
Yeah, Saint Pink. But with a big old wine chalice just talking about whether kids have been good or bad. But it's definitely, it's something I'd be concerned about. I don't know if he's going to miss time. I would think that no matter what, considering he was suspended for a game last year, you would have to assume he's going to miss at least one game this year, just, you know, for the accumulation of problems. So I would expect him to miss at least one game, maybe two, three, who knows? You might, you know, because Missouri doesn't play a conference game through the, in September. So if Pinkle wants to send a message, he could without affecting conference, you know, their conference record. So, I mean, is it possible that he's off the team before the fall starts? Yeah, because who knows what this investigation is about, but I'm not leaning that way just yet. I'm just expecting a suspension.
I am just incredibly nervous because Doriel Green Beckham is so, so good. And yeah. I would hate to see just whatever happens. I would hate to see him not in that Missouri offense. You look back to last year, LaDainian Washington and Marcus Murphy and Doriel Green Beckham, the three of them, I don't think there was, none of them had 1,000 yards receiving, but all of them had over 800. There mm-hmm. was, it was a three-team trio of guys that were all like 6'5 or 6'6, and having all of them on the field together just absolutely terrorized opposing secondaries, and now it was supposed to be just him. If for some reason he falls out of the picture, this is going to be a big change for Matty Mauk, who, you know, did get some, he sort of, I guess, cut his teeth on the playing field having those big targets out there. They do have a ton of running backs back from last year, Russell Hansborough. Marcus Murphy's in the backfield. Isn't it Lucas? Marcus Lucas.
Marcus Lucas, yeah.
Marcus Lucas is the wide receiver. Marcus Murphy is the running back. Missouri, I would hate to see, after that magical run from last year, essentially the whole picture kind of fall apart. And I know that Matty Mauk would be there, but without DGB, without all those other wide receivers, without Henry Josie, it just looks like a very different team without that just sort of one star out there. And I'd hate to see that.
Yeah, I mean, Missouri's only got 9 returning starters coming back as a team, so if you take DGB out of that, it goes down to 8, and that's a pretty big one to take out. So there certainly are a lot of questions about Missouri heading into the fall, and I think losing DGB would probably ensure that they're not winning another SEC East title this year, but at the same time, none of us expected them to win the SEC East title last year.
Yeah, okay, very true. Yeah, if DGB just gets a couple game suspension, doesn't get in trouble again, probably I still consider them in the maybe third to fourth to second, could sneak up and win it. Without DGB, I think that I no longer consider them a serious SEC East contender.
Yeah, and I mean, not even just for Missouri's sake, for, you know, DGB's sake, it's like you kind of want him to clear this stuff up because, yeah, the first things have all been pretty minor, typical college player stuff, but he's a very talented player who's, you know, has a pro future, you know, in the coming years. And all these little things keep adding up, and it could hurt his draft stock.
Cliff Kingsbury, talking like he might play in Texas Tech spring game on Saturday. Cliff Kingsbury was the subject of a very cool profile from our own Jeremy Fowler. Sort of had some fun going into not just some of the typical stuff, which is your Ray-Bans and your designer clothes, but also kind of finding out
finding out that
Cliff Kingsbury really likes Breaking Bad and binge watching Breaking Bad. Find out that, yeah, Kingsbury's a little bit OCD and likes to have all the details in line. And it's one of the youngest and one of the most colorful coaches. You know, obviously has now no longer the newness is there. It's fun to, as we are learning more about Kingsbury beyond the Ryan Gosling jokes, What are you anticipating in general from Texas Tech? If I was to say your like two sentence, what do you think Texas Tech will be in 2014? What are you thinking right now?
They will be improved upon last season. I do think, you know, it was a very good start to the year for the Raiders last year. They started off 5-0 or 5-1 like that, and then, you know, they kind of crept towards the finish line as they lost their last five regular. Yeah, they started off 7-0, and then they lost their last five regular season games. I think, you know, just improved if Kingsbury their second season. I think it's going to be a better team, although they've got a tough schedule. They've got Arkansas coming in September as well, which it wasn't a great team last year, but still it's an SEC opponent, and the game's public. But they start off their Big 12 play with two road games right off the bat with Oklahoma State, Kansas State, so those aren't easy, tough. But they do get Texas, Oklahoma, and Baylor all in Lubbock in November, which I think could be very good for them. And I think, like we mentioned earlier, with just how wide open this Big 12 is this year, like Kansas State, Texas Tech is somewhat of a sleeper.
And Tennessee and Utah State are going to play on the first opening weekend of the college football season. The game has been moved to Sunday night in a primetime slot on the brand new SEC network. But the most important thing about this game is what, Tom?
The return of Chucky Keaton.
The return of Chucky F. Keaton. We're very, very excited about this Utah State quarterback, and you will continue to hear us talk about him as he has a hopefully bounce-back season. It was awful to see him go down season-ending injury against Boise State last year. Utah State, of course, very, very competitive in the Mountain West, even after his injury. I think that Utah State is the Mountain West team to beat right now headed into 2014. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would certainly consider them a favorite. It's the Mountain West, I think, is a little open this year too, but I love Chucky Keaton, and he's going to put that whole team on his back, and he's going to win. But the concern I have with Utah State is they only have three returning starters on offense, including Keaton, and four returning starters on defense. So there's going to be a lot of new faces there, but it's certainly a team in the Mountain West where I feel like Fresno is going to take a step back, and Boise, who knows how things are going to be there now that Chris Peterson's actually left. I think Utah State, you have to consider, because Chucky Keaton is probably the best player in that conference when he's healthy.
And that leads us to our final segment, Mountain West, MAC, American, or USA, or Sun Belt.
Or Sun Belt. I'm gonna, spoiler alert, I don't have any Sun Belt teams in my list.
Spoiler alert, I don't think a Sun Belt team will compete for a spot in an Access Bowl this year.
Yeah, we agree. Right. I mean, maybe Arkansas State. That was the only one I could even muster some, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's you've got new head coach Blake Anderson, Fedora's old OC. I was talking, do you think Arkansas State is going to beat Miami, the Hurricanes?
No. No. I mean, maybe the Raging Cajuns, I guess. Arkansas State and the Cajuns were the two teams that I was giving the biggest shot to, but the Sun Belt, you know, it's such a grind, you know, and it's hard for Sun Belt teams to get through that entire grind undefeated.
Well,
the Sun Belt team will have to be undefeated to get a chance.
It didn't happen last year. Last year was like the one time where, Louisiana was like undefeated in conference play headed into those last weeks. And then there was those head scratching losses at the end of the season.
It's a grind.
It is a grind. All right. All right, so we've got one spot. Again, just a reminder, as part of the college football playoff, there will be three games on New Year's Eve, three games on New Year's Day. Two of those three games on New Year's Day will be the national semifinals, and one of the spots in the three games on New Year's Eve, the Access Bowls, will be saved for the top-ranked, according to the college football playoff selection committee, the top-ranked team from the other five conferences, which would be Mountain West, the MAC, the American, Conference USA, and the Sun Belt. So, Tom, we mentioned Utah State. Is Utah State on your handful of teams that you think is in the running for this?
Hell yes. Chucky Keaton going to put the team on his back.
Would you, and you, did you put Boise State or any other Mountain West teams on there?
I had Utah State. I have Boise State on the list, but it's kind of a you know, in limbo situation because, like I mentioned, with Chris Peterson gone and Harsin up there, it's going to be interesting to see the transition and how quickly things work. Because Boise, even before Peterson left, was not declining, but it wasn't, you know, climbing anymore as a program. It was it reached a, you know, a flatline situation.
Right.
So it's interesting to see what direction that program's going to go in now, but I can't write them off simply because of the success they've had in the last decade.
Is Bowling Green on your list?
No.
Ooh, no love for Dino Babers?
No, I do love Dino, but it's going to take more than he's going to need at least a second year to really get that stuff going there at full speed. I would put 2015, Bowling Green will probably be on this list. 2014, I think... transition.
I like the fact that Bowling Green brings back a lot, including quarterback Matt Johnson, who kind of balled in that MAC title game. I think they bring back 14 or 15 starters in total. Do you have anybody from the MAC on this list?
Yeah, I think you need to watch out for Ball State. That's a team that could certainly do pretty well in the MAC this year, possibly finish 11-1, maybe 12-0. Another team I like is Toledo. I like Matt Campbell a lot and what he's done with that program since taking over, and they kind of struggled a bit last year, but they've got a lot of starters coming back this year. And then I kind of put NIU under the line with other possibilities simply because it's Northern Illinois, but I just think it's going to be an interesting team to follow now that Jordan Lynch is gone, and I'd like to see, you know, what happens with it now. So they've got the history success, but it's going to be a very interesting season without Lynch, and it'll be fun to see what direction that goes.
Very agree with you on Toledo. Toledo is a team that could beat or scare anybody a year ago.
And, just ask Florida.
Yeah, and so I think that could be fun. All right, what about Marshall?
Marshall, I think Marshall is the Cinderella dark horse this year, where everybody's kind of picking them, and there's a good reason why, because it's a good team and a certainly win. So they're a very good player in Rakeem Cato, who could be, you know, the new Chucky Keaton, you know, hipster quarterback of the hipster college football fans that people just really fall in love with that maybe most people aren't paying attention to. So, yeah, Marshall's definitely on my list.
I love Marshall's, like, Doc Holliday basically came in there, and it's been about two seasons in the making, and this sort of, you know, wide open offense really just torched ECU in the Conference USA title game last year. And that was supposed to be a close game, and they absolutely dominated from wire to wire. I think that they will come back feeling like they can win every game in Conference USA play. And if they do it out of conference, I agree with you. They're going to be a popular Cinderella pick. All right. Yeah. I got Utah State, Marshall, Ball State, Bowling Green, Toledo, NIU, you said Boise, no, NIU is below your line. Is there anybody else that you would add to this group?
I think, you know, in the American, just looking at the new landscape of that conference, I like Houston. I think, you know, Houston's got 17 starters coming back, and it was a pretty good team last year, kind of had a rough finish. But I think that's a team that could put things together and have a very good season. I think Cincinnati, simply because Cincinnati always seems to hang around the top of the conference, whether it's called the Big East or the American, Cincinnati's generally there. So I think that's somebody you have to consider a possibility. And then the team that I'm interested in is the one that, you know, won the Fiesta Bowl, UCF. It's going to be interesting to see how Knights play without Blake Bortles and Storm Johnson and how that team adjusts and whether that program can keep moving forward, or if last year was just the accumulation of 4 years of those guys, you know, finally reaching their peak.
Loved freshman quarterback John O'Korn for Houston last year. Mm-hmm. That will be a fun team to watch because they came on strong. They were like, they had one window for about 2 weeks where they could really do some damage. And then I think they lost to UCF they had that close loss to Louisville.
Yeah, they couldn't quite get over that hump last year. I mean, they were a dangerous team just about every week. It's just when it came to, like, yeah, the UCFs and Louisville's, they kind of stumbled a bit. They lost. Although, I mean, they weren't blowouts. They didn't get blown out by anybody. They had the 1 point loss to BYU, you know, 47-46 shootout. That was their first loss of the year. They lost to UCF by 5 on the road. They lost to Louisville by 7 on the road, and then they lost at home to Cincinnati by 7. So this wasn't a team that was getting killed by anybody. It was just a team that had trouble, you know, finishing and executing at key points in certain games.
And Houston's defense among the nation's leaders in takeaways, right?
Yeah.
I know that was Bruce's big kick last year. And Cincinnati, I cannot believe I didn't mention them right off the bat. because your boy Gunnar Kiel, from all the reports in the Queen City of Ohio, sounds like he's kind of been balling. And Tommy Tuberville says he's feeling pretty good about the offense. We hope Munchie Legault will speak on your behalf. We hope Munchie Legault does come back healthy, but Gunnar Kiel has done a lot this spring to try and get his stake his claim in the starting quarterback role. He's out here talking about a chip on his shoulder, this, that, or the other. The well-traveled signal caller.
The veteran journeyman.
It's going to be interesting to see him take the field. But I'm right there with you. Cincinnati, they figure out a way to be right there every year.
Yeah, and I love all the attention that Kiel's spring game performance got over the weekend, because what, he threw for like 320 yards?
Yeah, 12 for 15 for 320 yards.
It's like, oh, wow, the quarterback threw a lot of yards in a spring game in which nobody was allowed to touch him, huh? Give him the Heisman now.
I didn't necessarily look at the stats, but when I saw Tuberville, you know, kind of have that like shrug off, like, well, not worried about the offense anymore.
Yeah.
That was the thing that I sort of took note of. Like, okay, Tubbs feels confident in this guy.
Oh yeah. I think he's certainly, it's not a bad thing. I saw a lot of overreaction to it last weekend. I'll just say that.
Did you see, the Amari Cooper spring game stats?
No, but I'm guessing it was like 15 catches for 470 yards.
It was like 8 catches, 190 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, well, Amari Cooper.
Speaking of, a CBSSports.com welcome to John Solomon.
Yes, that was just announced as we were recording here.
Yeah, so I'm sure if you're still listening, you will hear John Solomon on the podcast soon. We'll get him on here and sort of let him introduce himself. Very excited about that. And we got spring games ahead this weekend. Some more spring games coming up. Anything on the April 12th, this Saturday, that you're particularly looking for?
No, just, you know, there's a lot more spring games. I'll probably pay some attention to those. But, you know, spring games are great to help you get through the winter and spring towards football season, which it is technically now football season because college basketball ended on Monday night. So I'll be paying some attention, but there's nothing too interesting I'm looking at. I mean, I'll probably be watching Illinois just to see Wes Lunt.
Wes Lunt, more like We Slant.
We Slant.
Are you not going to watch any of the Masters?
Oh yeah, for sure. But you know, this is a college football podcast.
What's nah, man? We're at minute 32. It's
cool. Pretty rare. Yeah, no, I'll definitely be watching a lot of the Masters this weekend, probably more so than the spring games, to be honest.
Anybody you're particularly rooting for? I don't know of any Italians.
No, not that I know of. I'm just rooting for it to be interesting, really. I mean, I don't want to just make it interesting on Sunday. Nobody, I don't really have like a favorite.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the fact that you go into I feel like your general approach to golf is, I understand that this is a big deal. I really like sports. I would like for it to be thrilling.
Yeah, because I mean, the only real tournaments I watch are the majors anyway. I'm not watching the, you know, Scott Trade Open in Scottsdale or some crap or whatever you want to call it. But comes to the Masters, U.S. Open, the British Open, and those, I watch the hell out. It's just because it looks so pretty on the big TV.
Yeah, it looks awesome in HD.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Especially Augusta National. All right, well, remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. I'm taking Matt Kuchar as my pick and the guy that I'll be rooting for this weekend. Follow the Ion College Football Podcast at Ion CFB. Subscribe on iTunes, and you'll be able to get it before it goes up on the .com. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back.